Lucian Wilbanks began with a lengthy and quite dull lecture about the presumption of innocence and how it is the foundation of American jurisprudence. Regardless of what they had read in the local newspaper, and here he managed a scornful glance in my general direction, his client, sitting right there at the moment, was an innocent man. And if anyone felt otherwise, then he or she was duty-bound to raise a hand and say so. No hands. Good. Then by your silence, you're telling the court that you, all of you, can look at Danny Paget right now and say he is innocent. Can you do that? He hammered them on this for far too long, then shifted to the burden of proof with another lecture on the state's monumental challenge to prove his client guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. These two sacred protections, the presumption of innocence and proof beyond a reasonable doubt, were granted to all of us, including the jurors, by the very wise men who wrote our Constitution and Bill of Rights. We were approaching noon, and everybody was anxious for a break. Wilbanks seemed to miss this, and he kept rattling on. When he sat down at 12:15, Judge Lupus announced that he was starving. We would recess until 2 o'clock. Baggy and I had a sandwich upstairs in the bar room with several of his cronies, three aging, washed-up lawyers who hadn't missed a trial in years. Baggy really wanted a glass of whiskey, but for some odd reason felt the call of duty. His pals did not. The clerk had given us a list of jurors as they were currently seated. Miss Callie was number 22, the first black and the third female. It was the general feeling that the defense would not challenge her because she was black, and blacks, according to the prevailing theory, were sympathetic to those accused of crimes. I wasn't sure how a black person could be sympathetic to a white thug like Danny Paget, but the lawyers were unshakable in their belief that Lucian Wilbanks would gladly take her. Under the same theory, the prosecution would exercise one of its arbitrary, peremptory challenges and strike her from the panel. Not so, said Chick Elliott, the oldest and drunkest of the gang.
I'd take her if I were prosecuting, he argued, then knocked back a potent shot of bourbon.
Why? Baggy asked.
Because we know her so well now, thanks to the Times. She came across as a sensible, God-fearing, Bible-quoting patriot who raised all those kids with a heavy hand and a swift kick in the ass if they screwed up.
I agree,
said Tackett, the youngest of the three. Tackett, though, had a tendency to agree with whatever the prevailing theory happened to be.
She'd make an ideal juror for the prosecution. Plus, she's a woman. It's a rape case. I'd take all the women I could get.
They argued for an hour. It was my first session with them, and I suddenly understood how Baggy collected so many differing opinions about so many issues. Though I tried not to show it, I was deeply concerned that my long and generous stories about Miss Callie would somehow come back to haunt her. After lunch, Judge Lupus moved into the most serious phase of questioning, the death penalty. He explained the nature of a capital offense and the procedures that would be followed. Then he yielded again to Ernie Gaddis. Juror number 11 was a member of some obscure church, and he made it very clear that he could never vote to send a person to the gas chamber. Juror number 34 was a veteran of two wars, and he felt rather strongly that the death penalty wasn't used often enough. This, of course, delighted Ernie, who singled out individual jurors and politely asked them questions about judging others and imposing the death sentence. He eventually made it to Miss Callie.
Now, Mrs. Ruffin, I've read about you, and you seem to be a very religious woman. Is this correct?
I do love the Lord.
Yes, sir,
she answered, as clear as always.
Are you hesitant to sit in judgment of another human?
I am.
Yes, sir. Do you want to be excused?
No, sir. It's my duty as a citizen to be here. Same as all these other folks.
And if you're on the jury, and the jury finds Mr. Paget guilty of these crimes, can you vote to put him to death?
I certainly wouldn't want to.
My question was, can you?
I can follow the law same as these other folks. If the law says that we should consider the death penalty, then I can follow the law.
4 hours later, Kalia H. Ruffin became the last juror chosen, the first black to serve on a trial jury in Ford County. The drunks up in the barroom had been right. The defense wanted her because she was black. The state wanted her because they knew her so well. Plus, Ernie Gaddis had to save his jury strikes for less appealing characters. Late that night, I sat alone in my office working on a story about the opening day and jury selection. I heard a familiar noise downstairs. Harry Rex had a way of shoving open the front door and stomping on the wooden floor so that everybody at the Times, regardless of the time of day, knew he had arrived.
"Willie boy!"
he yelled from below. "Up here," I yelled back. He rumbled up the stairs and fell into his favorite chair.
"What do you think of the jury?"
he said. He appeared to be completely sober. "I only know one of them," I said. "How many do you know?"
7.
"You think they picked Miss Callie because of my stories?"
"Yep,"
he said, brutally honest as always.
"Everybody's been talking about her. Both sides felt like they knew her. It's 1970, and we've never had a black juror. She looked as good as any. Does that worry you?"
"I guess it does."
"Why? What's wrong with serving on a jury? It's about time we had blacks doing it. She and her husband have always been anxious to break down barriers. Ain't like it's dangerous. Well, normally it ain't dangerous."
I hadn't talked to Miss Callie, and I would not be able to do so until after the trial. Judge Lupus had ordered the jurors sequestered for the week. By then, they were hiding in a motel in another town. "Any suspicious characters on the jury?" I asked.
"Maybe. Everybody's worried about that cripple boy from out near Dumas, Ferguson. Hurt his back in a sawmill owned by his uncle. The uncle sold timber to the Pagets many years ago. The boy has some attitude. Gaddis wanted to bump him, but he ran out of challenges."
The cripple boy walked with a cane and was at least 25 years old. Harry Rex referred to anyone younger than himself, and especially me, as boy.
"But with the Pagets, you never know,"
he continued.
"Hell, they could own half the jury by now."
"You don't really believe that, do you?"
"No, but a hung jury wouldn't surprise me either. It might take 2 or 3 shots at this boy before Ernie gets him."
"But he will go to prison, won't he?" The thought of Danny Paget escaping punishment frightened me. I had invested myself in the town of Clanton, and if its justice was so corruptible, then I didn't want to stay.
"They'll hang his ass."
"Good. The death penalty?"
"I'd bet on it eventually. This is the buckle of the Bible Belt, Willie. An eye for an eye, all that crap. Lupus'll do everything he can to help Ernie get a death verdict."
I then made the mistake of asking him why he was working so late. A divorce client had left town on business, then sneaked back to catch his wife with her boyfriend. The client and Harry Rex had spent the last 2 hours in a borrowed pickup behind a Hot Sheets motel north of town. As it turned out, the wife had 2 boyfriends. The story took half an hour to tell.